So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Nicola Millard from BT. Welcome back, Nicola.
Thank you for having me.
So, Nicola, would you be kind enough to remind us, our listeners and readers, about you and the work that you do?
Sure, yeah, no problem. Well, I'm a futurologist, and therefore I know psychically what everyone is thinking, because being psychic is part of the job. No, I always get asked about crystal balls, and I keep saying that futurology isn't all about crystal balls, and I've always said I'm not sure I am a futurologist, because a lot of the things that I talk about are happening now.
Yeah.
And my remit, I'm not a technologist, so my remit is really to try and figure out how technology is changing our behaviours, and in particular in relation to customer service, what the effect of things like smartphones and self-serve and all of that good stuff is on some of the more traditional things like contact centres.
Yes.
So my remit is really trying to look at consumer behaviour and how that's developing, and what are the pressures strategically on our customer service points.
Fantastic. Now, I saw you speak at a recent conference, and you were talking about a concept that you are developing, trialing, called Customer Easy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, haha, it's a new thing. So can you tell us a little bit more about that, and is it just another metric?
Well, firstly, it's not new, to be perfectly honest. I mean, we've been talking about effort and easy and convenience and all sorts of things for many, 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 many years, but I think back in 2010, a cat was chucked somewhat amongst the pigeons by Harvard Business Review, and a very, very well-informed and researched article, which basically claimed that you don't need to satisfy your customers anymore. You need to make it easy for them to do business with you, because loyalty is in decline. We know this. The data that we've been collecting over the years is showing that customers are getting less loyal, and frankly, why should we be loyal? We have lots and lots of choice, and lots of transparency in terms of the information about that choice, because we have Google knowledge now. So, you know, we're often doing our homework as customers, and that's one big thing that we're seeing in the market. So in the UK, only 50% of customers are saying that they're loyal anymore. But then when you look at satisfaction and loyalty, they do correlate. But as the Harvard Business Review article sort of really exposed, that you can make your customers very satisfied and they still sometimes leave you. So looking at drivers for loyalty, actually Easy comes out quite persuasively, and indeed did come out in that data as one of the main reasons why people come back. Make it easy, they will often come back to you. So, and again, correlating that with some of the data that we've been seeing, you know, people are saying, I'm not loyal, but I will come back if you make things easy. So I think that kind of kicked, I mean, that article caused a bit of a fuss, because previously to that, we were all saying, you know, you have to wow your customers, go the extra mile,
yes,
you know. And to a certain extent, that's still true, but actually, what's the effect on loyalty? So, I mean, we've been doing a lot of research over the years. In particular, I mean, Moira Clark of Henley Business School has been talking about effort and easy for quite a long time. So we actually worked with her to really try and bottom out this trend that we were seeing around easy.
Right.
And her researchers basically said, well, to a certain extent, the Harvard Business Review article is true, that you don't necessarily have to satisfy your customers. And I think Moira quite rightly pointed out that if you satisfy them and they don't notice, probably not a lot of point, because actually, you know, sometimes satisfaction is a hygiene factor rather than is expected, you know, it's not necessarily something that's special anymore. So by all means, I mean, if customers are valuing something, you know, satisfy them, make sure that you do get that right, but actually otherwise just make it easy for them to do business with you, and the likelihood is they'll come back. But a lot of the stuff that we've been doing is around, okay, strategically that sounds very sound, there's some great academic stuff behind it, how do we do this stuff pragmatically? And,
sure,
and certainly in BT, the first thing you have to do in a big company like BT is really you know, look at the accountancy aspects of this. So how do we measure this?
Yes.
How do we start to get a metric in? And you're right, it is a new metric, I suppose. But in BT, we kind of hijacked the Net Promoter Score and turned it into the Net Easy Score. And, and that's currently a measure that's very much driving our strategy in our consumer division at the moment. Partially because I think we thought that we weren't necessarily the easiest company to do business with, but because, you know, I would say metrics are great. If you're not good at something, measure it and you'll get better. So actually putting a metric behind this is really enabling us to concentrate down on what do customers value and how do we make it easy, and then pragmatically, how do we actually apply and measure so that when we change something, can we see the effect on things like easy scores? So, yeah, that's the sort of thing we've been trying to do around just taking that relatively old concept and actually putting a metric behind it and then looking at the effect of that on. It's a great measure for the contact centre for a start.
Yes.
So,
And what sort of in its implementation and things, what sort of results are you kind of like seeing? Are you measuring the easy and then seeing an uplift in other things or benefits in, like, particularly the contact center, call handling, call resolution, all those kind of good things?
Yes, call handling is quite an interesting one because I've maintained that's a terrible measure. and typically at the moment what we're finding, because a lot of self-service initiatives are starting to kick in and work, is the call handle time is going up, down, because actually customers are contacting when they have complex stuff. So that's good. I mean, that's what you want them. You want to add the value of a human brain. But I think in terms of correlation with other measures, absolutely, we're starting, we measure a lot in BT, and we can start to see the effect of things like NetEasy, which is the score that we use, which is a 1-3 score. So one is, it's very similar to Net Promoter. You score +1. If you're easy, you score -1. If you're ranked as difficult, and nothing if you're... people don't really know, and we can start to look at the effect of that measure on all sorts of stuff. So we know it drives our Net Promoter Score, for example. That's the first thing. We also, not rocket science, frankly, but we can prove that people that are finding us difficult are more likely to churn than any other customers. People that are finding it easy are finding they're less likely to churn. So, you know, it's correlating with a lot of other conventional, traditional measures. The one thing we are finding is that it's almost the missing link, I guess, between things like Net Promoter Score and things like One and Done, Right First Time, or First Contact Resolution, that kind of measure, which is a customer-affecting measure, but is more of an internal process measure. So it's the connecting tissue, if you like, between them. Net Promoter is quite a difficult measure, I think, for the contact centre to affect, because it's quite difficult for the contact centre to say, you know, I can push the customer up 1 point. And it can be quite expensive, actually, to push a customer up 1 point on Net Promoter. Whereas in Net Easy, you can make it easy for people. You can see a pragmatic effect on that. So we can measure, actually, the contact centre for us drives a tremendous amount. Almost 70% of our Net Promoter score are contact centre type things, like getting through to the right advisor who has the right knowledge, being able to navigate through the IVRs and find things on the website. All of those things affect the Net Easy score. And then we can also compare channels with each other, so we can see which channels are easier than others. And I can tell you that consistently over the just over 2 years of data that we've gathered in BT, the bottom channel is post, a very traditional channel. Still a very big complaints channel, but difficult for both the customer and for us actually to handle. On the other end of our easyometer, as we like to call it, is the is web chats. That's consistently over the just over 2 years of data been the number one channel. So customers often start online, so they find it very easy to hit a button and hopefully get through to somebody that can help them rather than maybe finding a phone and a phone number. And then we find sort of grouped in the middle are some of the more traditional channels like email, like IVR, like voice. And that's really, I mean, certainly IVR is where we've been concentrating some of our effort in terms of redesigning the IVRs, because like most IVRs, as mutated rather than was designed. So every time we added a product or service, there was a new option, and that gets unwieldy. Press 52 for this, you know. So we knew that that wasn't ranking very well on the easy scores. And actually, one of the lovely things about the score is you can see the pragmatic effects of design on the score. So if you do a redesign, you can start to see that hopefully you're going in the right direction with the redesign. You're getting a more positive score. You can actually see the effect on customer scores and see if you are making the right design decisions. So for us, moving a lot more to natural language IVR, simplifying the menus if there are menus, using the customer language, you know, using plain English rather than jargon, all of that's driving the score upwards in terms of redesign.
Excellent. I mean, it sort of seems to me that is there a possibility that there's a hierarchy within these kind of like metrics, in that we talk about sort of effort and easy, and then we talk about satisfaction and wow and delight, and then how, and then we talk about customer advocacy and things. I mean, is there a possibility that there is a hierarchy here?
You know, I think with measures, my opinion on measures is that you measure what you're not good at to improve it. And my take on measures is they should be an ever-evolving kind of basket, I guess.
Yeah.
So if you acknowledge you're not good at something, measures add the focus on it so that you can get better. And if you get better at that measure, you probably need to look at other measures. I think measures can be used as a sort of complementary set rather than necessarily a hierarchy. But, I mean, as I said, the research is showing that easy does have a very high correlation with a number of quite critical measures like loyalty, like retention, like net promoter.
Yeah.
And it can actually start to give you clues around, are your processes right? So are you helping right first time as well? Because the chances are, and we know that, you know, after 3 contacts, for example, that our net easy score drops off a cliff. Right. So instantly we know that right first time will affect the easy score too. So my kind of take on measures is measure what you're not good at. Have a basket of measures. Actually, certainly Joanna Howard, who's been driving a lot of this initiative within BT Consumer, is of the opinion you measure pretty much everything. And it just gives you lots of clues as to how you're doing. And obviously your focus tends to switch.
Yeah.
Depending on you know, what you're not good at the moment, but measure everything and then make meaning of that data.
Okay, that's, I mean, brilliant. I mean, and then going back to last time we spoke, which is almost just over a year ago, I think. Last time you said you believed that live chat was going to be the next big force in customer service, delivery of inbound customer experience, etc. I mean, are you seeing that based on your data and things? Are you seeing that coming true?
We are certainly seeing growth, gradual growth in it. I think over the years, the customer figures that we've been doing, the customer research that we've been doing, has shown that customers like web chat, again, because a lot of us are starting online. Not all of us, obviously, but a lot of us are starting online. So it comes out as easy. And I think if you're looking at an easy channel, because it is literally hitting a button. A lot of it's in the design. I've always maintained that you know, if you get the design of the buttons right and you pop them up at appropriate times, and you can, as long as this is to do with routing as well, so how do you get the right agent off the back of this as well? Because
yes,
that's a very critical piece. Certainly, you can start to see the effect on easy and getting the wrong advisor. So, you know, I think it's a design thing, but all of our data at the moment is pointing towards the growth of live chat, and I think there are 3 reasons for that.
Okay.
Certainly, the customer finds it easy. I think the second one is actually when we look at within contact centres, actually agents quite like chat as well, because it's not as isolating as the phone.
Yes.
You can stand up and scream across the office. Anyone has found this problem without having to put the customer on hold. And I keep saying, you know, on hold sometimes is the customer interprets that as you don't know what you're talking about. You have to ask. So, you know, it's from an agent perspective, a lot of the agents that we interviewed in some of our research are saying that they quite like it too. And you can transfer chats as well. It's technically very feasible to do that, so an agent can read through everything that's gone on before. It's really nice with things like social media. So in some senses, social media is a very public channel. You don't want everything in public. So again, web chat can act as quite a nice bridge. If someone's in on a public social media channel, call them into a private chat channel, identify who they are, try and solve their problem, and then by all means, try and encourage them to reflect you solved the problem back in the public channel. But, you know, it sits so nicely alongside that. And then finally, you know, the economics of it have been much discussed, and the the advantages of things like concurrency, so having, you know, one agent on multiple chat sessions, and I keep saying I have seen up to 10. I really, really don't know how they would handle that, but we don't recommend more than 3 maximum. And for more complex stuff, you know, you may only want to do one. But because you can potentially have agents working on concurrent web chats, or if they're not on a web chat, you can have them working on, you know, other channels like email, social media, you know, even post. You know, you can start to mix and match things. So actually, the economics seem to work as well. So because we're getting customer pull, employee pull, and actually the economics backing up, that's one of the reasons why my money is on it as a big growth channel for the future.
Excellent. Now, recently I heard about the use of text messaging for inbound customer service. So a customer would be able to send a text to, say, a free phone customer service number.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered if you'd sort of heard about that, because it's something that somebody kind of told me about that's starting to happen sort of in the States, is that, it's been around, well, and there's a convergence of two familiar sort of technologies, i.e. the phone and also text messaging. Is that something that you've heard of and seen or exploring the use of in BT, or you see it sort of coming into the UK market?
I mean, yes, I think we're seeing text messaging as sort of on the grid. I can't see necessarily going to grow. I always say that the difference between something like chat and text messaging is that text messages are not necessarily a guaranteed service. Now, I had one of these the other day. Just as I got to the airport, I got a text message saying my plane was cancelled. And when I obviously approached the customer service desk, they said, oh, well, we sent that about 3 hours ago.
Right.
So it doesn't necessarily mean when you press send, you actually get it at the other end. So that's one issue, I guess, with SMS, is that it's not necessarily an instantly guaranteed service. But, I mean, it can be used very powerfully. I don't know so much about the inbound, but certainly we are seeing use on outbound, things like appointment reminders, all of that kind of stuff. And certainly we use that in BT all the time around engineering appointments for a start. So, you know, you get a text saying you have an appointment, you still remember that, don't you?
Yeah.
So that sort of thing, I think, on an outbound basis, it's very well used. On an inbound basis, again, because it's not necessarily a guaranteed service, there might be an assumption you received it when you didn't. So in terms of, you know, that versus chat, because chat is more of an instantaneous service, that you're on a chat client, it's less problematic potentially in terms of that delay. But
yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, I think that's a good distinction. But I thought it was interesting in that apart from the challenges around the SLAs that go with sort of telcos and deliverability of SMSs, because I think sometimes a normal SMS can be delivered rather than necessarily instantly, is up to about 4 hours or something on a standard SLA. But actually, what I thought was interesting about it was the fact that the text messaging is familiar technology to even my mum and my dad. And I thought, well, that's quite interesting, because actually if you made that widely known, then actually there's an interesting angle around sort of the lack of a need of education because it's already an understood and familiar technology. And so I thought, oh, that makes that quite interesting.
Very true. I mean, I do think it potentially extends it out to an audience that aren't particularly tech savvy. Having said that, it's very easy to paint an older population as not connected, but, you know, actually a lot of older people have seized upon technologies like the iPad, for example.
Yeah.
And actually text on an iPad, not that usable. It's far, far easier to do something like chat.
Yes.
So I think if you've got a basic phone, potentially you could extend it out to a population that aren't, you know, smart in terms of their phones or tablets, but actually in terms of the technologies, not so sure, because I think text is not necessarily quite as usable on a smartphone as maybe chat would be.
Yeah, fair enough. So, given that we're talking about new stuff, in terms of customer service and customer experience and the multi or omni-channel experience, whatever we're calling it these days, I mean, what are you seeing as the big issues that firms are grappling with right now, and what's coming next now that we're sort of a year on since we first spoke?
Well, I think we just done a piece of work called SuperAgent 2020, which has been a sort of an industry poll of how they think the contact centre in particular is developing. And I think one of the challenges that came out of that was that it's a relatively conservative industry. So, you know, there wasn't a huge amount of revelation coming out there. And I think one of the things that did come out in the data was, you know, potentially there's been a big debate around contact centre and its role now in an era of self-service. And it's quite easy to get sort of into that point where the discussion is around automating the contact centre out. And I think having worked in the contact centre industry for a very long time, I think that would be a huge shame, because actually the human contact piece comes out very strongly from customer experience research, and not just ours, but broadly customer experience research, that the human touch does make an awful lot of difference. So automating, yes, automate the really, you know, boring transactional stuff out, absolutely, you know, make it easy for customers to do things themselves. They want to, often, mm-hmm. you know, they want that control, but actually, you know, the contact center is there to help when things go wrong, or when people are uncertain, or they need advice. And I think that's got to be huge pressure when you look at how the contact centre develops into the future, because they're dealing with complexity. Agents need to be able to deal with complexity. They need to be fantastically good communicators. They need to be able to take on complex problem solving. They need to potentially also not just take on the complex problem solving role, they almost need to become guardians of the customer experience. And potentially, strategically, and a few companies are thinking about this now, because they're the central hub, the relationship hub, if you like, of multiple channels, they actually have a far better view than probably any other department in any company of what customers are thinking, what customer problems are, what's going on in real time with customers. And with the analytics tools and the big data type capabilities going on at the moment, the ability to analyze that data is becoming increasingly easy. The difficult piece, and I think the biggest challenge for customer service and customer experience, is that you need to be able to get the board to understand that actually something like a contact center isn't a cost necessarily. Yes. I mean, that's often boards, that's what they see, the contact center as a cost. How do you actually start to move it strategically into the beating heart of the organisation and the guardian of the customer experience? So if, say, the website's down, you know, the contact centre knows pretty immediately.
Yeah.
Rather than just taking the calls, they probably need to be a lot more proactive to actually ring the website guys for a start and say, hi guys, did you know the website's down? Oh, you do. Okay, when is it going to be up? Because I need to manage customers' expectations. And then back in there, I mean, I think one of the increasingly interesting aspects of particularly the contact center space is, can they start to become a lot more proactive? So rather than managing demand, having to respond kind of passively to demand, can they actually start to manage it proactively? So, you know, start to push messages out over social media, change the IVR so that they make people aware if they're ringing that there is an issue. You know, really pushing the organisation to say, this is a customer-affecting problem, how do we solve it, how do we manage expectations? So that, in some sense, isn't the role they have played in the past, but it could be the role that they play in the future. And I think that's, I keep saying, you know, that's one of the reasons why potentially this is an exciting industry. But the biggest challenge is selling that contact centre, the contact centre in particular, selling that position up to the board to say, actually, we could do this. We could become your beating heart, your kind of eyes and ears. Take that data in, value it, rather than necessarily look at it as something we need to design out because it costs money.
And what do you think it's going to take to make that happen, or can the contact centre do anything themselves to kind of to try and, if you like, facilitate that change?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can, and you know, I think a lot of the industry bodies are starting to sort of push that way as well. I think firstly, you know, having that credibility piece, saying, you know, we do know what's happening, we can see some of the causes here, and we can be useful in designing the customer experience. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a product manager, go to the contact etc., and listen to calls. Yeah. Don't do a market survey. Listen to calls, you know, see what's coming in about your product. You will learn an awful lot, and I'm not sure necessarily a lot of managers are in that mindset. So I think it's almost a sales pitch upward to say, you know, we could do this.
Yeah.
Obviously, that does also direct attention to the contact centre, and there is a pressure then to deliver.
Yes.
But, you know, I think that the challenge for the industry, especially at the moment, is there is a risk of the rise of the robots.
Yes.
That if you're not doing anything more than the technology, if you're reading a script or you don't add any value or you're seen as a cost, you're probably going to get designed out of existence, and that's not really where we want to be, I suspect.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, and a great deal more proactivity and always kind of inviting people to come and to see what they're up to and to, you know, to listen into the, if you like, the real-time focus group, in effect, or real-time feedback that's getting received from the business every minute of every day.
Absolutely, and you know what to do with that feedback. I always say, you know, big data has been around for a very long time. The challenge with big data is taking it in and doing something about it, so becoming a little bit more agile as an organisation.
Sure.
Actually, there's a classic tweet I picked up this weekend. You know, they tweeted, this guy tweeted the company, and then they'd acknowledged and apologised, but done absolutely nothing about the problem he was reporting.
Yeah.
So his frustration was not, you know, that they'd acknowledged the tweet, because they had. It's actually they'd done nothing to actually improve the situation that he complained about in the first place.
Yeah, so it's a bit like saying thank you, and then thank you, we're listening, but we're not really, because we're going to ignore you now.
Yeah.
Which is the ultimate sort of dismissal when, you know, from on a personal sort of note.
Absolutely.
So, Nicholas, anything else you'd like to add? Things that that you've been looking into that you think, oh, this is interesting. We should share this before I ask you my last question.
Well, crikey, there's so many things you can think about, and I think there are lots and lots of challenges as we go forward into the future, into an omni-channel future. Obviously, I would say that the challenges of opening up more channels, it's like opening doors. You need more connecting corridors behind them to connect everything together. So, you know, and customers are becoming more omni-channel now. One of the interesting questions to debate is that by choice?
Yes.
Are channels kind of failing customers, and why? So I think that's one interesting question that we're certainly having a look at the moment. Obviously, you know, there are pressures around, you know, who do we recruit? How do we actually deliver service? How do we manage it? How do we measure it? What technologies do we need? And obviously, some of the technologies can allow you to work in incredibly different ways. And I often get asked, you know, what was the prediction I got most wrong? And it's things like home-based advisors, you know.
Right.
For me, you know, because you're untied with geography, you can recruit a very different agent base. I keep saying you don't recruit younger people to be a home-based advisor, because typically they don't have homes, or they live with their parents, you know. So actually, you tend to get a slightly older profile, and with age, there are a few good things that age brings, but, you know, experience, knowledge, all of that kind of stuff. So technically, it's perfectly feasible. I keep saying we ran the first trials in BT of operators working from home in 1992. Wow. So, you know, it's not a new concept, and we're seeing it take off in the States. But it's often that trust element, you know. But, you know, things like cloud, potentially, you know, you're looking at, if you've got an internet connection, you can become part of a network of experts dealing with customer problems, and it sort of opens up thinking. So I think, you know, I think one of the exciting things about the future is that the possibilities are potentially limitless if you start to think very differently, because of course this does break down silos.
Yeah.
Traditional silos, your front office and your back office start to merge, your back end is now your front end, literally. So, you know, all of the sort of defined boundaries and barriers potentially can start to drop, and that is a challenge, obviously, because there are also legacies, systems, processes, people, management styles, all of those things are open for negotiation now. So I think it's quite an exciting time at the moment. There are lots of challenges, but potentially, I used to joke, particularly in the contact centre space, that the only thing that changed was the carpets.
Yes.
I think we need to do a lot more than change the carpets.
I think so, but I also think the question that you asked in the beginning of that piece, where you said, is omni-channel something that are customers using different channels by choice, or are they being forced to use channels through channel failure? That's a fascinating question.
Yeah.
And I'd be really interested to find out more about kind of what you find out. So maybe round three at some point in the future.
Absolutely, watch this space.
Fantastic. So finally, Nicola, is there anything that you'd like to shamelessly plug?
Well, I don't know about shamelessly plugging, but certainly if anyone wants to sort of join the conversation, we have the BT Let's Talk blog online. I blog occasionally, but there's all sorts of things going on there, all sorts of topics being discussed. We also have a Twitter feed, so if you want to drop in. Obviously, a lot of the research that I've talked about, so things like the easy effort piece, that should be available over that site, but that is available. And that was a study that Moira Clark at Henley Business School did with us last year. We've also always got research on the go, so SuperAgent 2020 is also available, so if anyone wants to have a look at that, that should be downloadable too. And we also very regularly do pieces. The Autonomous Customer was the last one on the customer that we actually released, which was last year, but there will be a new incarnation, I hope, of that coming up towards the end of the year. So watch this space on that one too.
Super. Well, thank you for that, Nicola. That's been excellent, and lots of things to think about. So I just want to say thank you for your time, and I'll make sure I get all this edited up and linked up, and published. And we'll give you a big shout out for the stellar work that you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure.